Welcome to Slug's bi-weekly Slug Soundwaves podcast. Here, in our print mag and on slugmag.com, enjoy our curated content that highlights the best of Utah's alternative and underrepresented music, arts, events, and community subcultures. If Slug has benefited you or someone you love, consider contributing to sustain our existence. Head to slugmag.com/donate to join our community of donors.
KRCL was founded in 1979 to bring a more diverse voice to Salt Lake City and surrounding areas. KRCL is community funded and supported, which allows diverse commercial free programming that varies from indie to hip hop, blues to bluegrass, metal, punk, indigenous, and bilingual programs. Every weekday at 6 p.m., KRCL's Radioactive brings you grassroots activism and civic engagement with punk rock farming and live local music on Fridays. Tune in to KRCL at 90.9 FM. Stream at krcl.org or download the app on the App Store.
Shh! Are you listening? This is Slug Soundwaves.
Menlo is a six-piece Salt Lake-based band that's been around since at least the early 2000s. Their sound is reminiscent of artists like R.E.M. and Neil Young, and gives me feelings of nostalgia. The band is in the process of releasing its first ever album, called A Meager Inheritance, which will probably double as its last. The album was recorded over 15 years ago. It's now headed to the vinyl press. That's the unique thing about this album in today's day and age. It will only be available on vinyl for the first months of its release. Pink vinyl copies should be delivered to listeners later this year, and then the group will host a listening party, hopefully on a rooftop somewhere in Salt Lake. And then you'll be able to stream it wherever you listen. Until then, I sat down with four of the band's members to talk about writing songs just after the stock market crashed in 2008. Each of them were navigating difficult times, and they discuss how the album served them in ways they wouldn't realize until much later. You can find the album link to pre-order a copy for yourself and some extra tidbits that were cut from the episode in the description of our website at slugmag.com/soundwaves.
My name's Hiram, and I play guitars and sing on the album.
My name is Anthony. On the recording, I play trumpet, recorder, some tin whistle.
My name's Gary Larson, and I play the piano and organ on the album.
I'm Brian. I play lead guitar and some steel guitar I just recently got around the time when we got this album. I paid $79 for this thing, and I was so excited to have it that it's on a lot of tracks. And then I do harmony vocals, and I met Hiram not too long before we made this recording, but we'd already made another recording in his same studio, and we've done lots of different things together ever since, so it's been a fun friendship.
So our band name is Menlo. That's a street I used to live on, but I don't anymore. And this album's been in the can for 14 or 15 years. It's called A Meager Inheritance. It's kind of just pop rock, but really heavily influenced by all of our influences, which by and large is probably just college radio alternative from the late 90s, early aughts. I mean, alternative, that word's kind of lost its meaning, but roughly in that genre. Gary and I listened to, we met in high school and we listened to Brit Rock and Alternative and, you know, right before grunge and everything went wrong.
Yeah. I mean, we're all basically, you know, kids from the 80s and so we were a lot influenced by that kind of music.
My guess is Anthony has the broadest spectrum of musical interests. he's a Renaissance man.
And he brings this Shostakovich into the project.
I would describe it acoustically like Funeral Potatoes. It's just, it's solid, it's a go-to, and it's just well-crafted. And
yeah, well, speaking of Funeral Potatoes, I would say it also is of Salt Lake. Yeah. I mean, it's very much a Utah record, but something I think other people from other places will be able to get to. There are certain themes, I think, that resonate throughout it that would appeal to people who are, you know, into alternative music, but also from this part of the country and influenced by the larger culture here.
So Hiram and I did a band in high school, and then Hiram went on and did some really great bands elsewhere, which I loved, and Mona. And so I was sort of jealous that I hadn't been in a cool band. And so, and I did a couple less successful bands. And
really, Ohio had some really good songs.
But I was excited that Hiram had the availability to work on a new project, and so I started working with Hiram, recording, started writing some songs with our friend Ray, who isn't here today, but he's the drummer on the project. And I think what attracted me to is I wanted to just write some good pop songs, you know, like that were well written and that were interesting and beautiful. And then I think maybe the next steps, we wanted to have a little bit more of a rock element to it, and that's why we needed Brian to come in and add some great guitar, and then Anthony filled everything out with some of the extra instruments.
Yeah, I remember specifically going into it, a lot of my bands have been pretty sparse, both live and in the recordings, and with this I really wanted to, and I don't know that this comparison really shows through exactly, but I wanted to add a little more of an eclectic element, specifically like along the lines of Bell and Sebastian, where they had a lot of different instruments, and Anthony and Gary really made that vision come through. And Brian has a home studio, and he just took the rough tracks and just tracked all kinds of great stuff, like you said, the steel guitar, right? Mm-hmm. And tons of great just electric guitar parts and solos and some banjo.
Yeah. Well, we tracked a lot of my guitar parts in the studio that was only like a block or two away from here.
Yeah.
Just in downtown Salt Lake, kind of over by Pioneer Park. And that was really fun because got to crank up my amps and just go as loud as I wanted. And we got to take as many takes as we wanted. And, you know, so I'm really happy with the sounds that we got in your studio, too. Speaking of elsewhere, when I first moved to Salt Lake, you know, getting to know Salt Lake was interesting because you had these bars where you had to have a private membership, and so you couldn't really go out and check out the music scene very well. But back then, they had this Battle of the Bands that a local publication was doing. And so for one night, you could buy a wristband that would get you to any of the clubs. And so I had some other friends that were performing pretty close by to where it turns out they were performing. And so in between bands, I just wandered over to the Zephyr, and I caught this band that just blew my mind. I mean, I was like, this is my favorite band. And it turned out some years later, while we were working on another record and we're sitting in that studio doing the mixing on it, and I all of a sudden start to figure out, it's like, wait a minute, that was your band, Hiram. And Ray was also in that band, the drummer. So I turned to him and I said, well, if you ever put together another project, I want to be in.
The album's called A Meager Inheritance. I really wanted it to be a concept album, so it's vaguely about Armageddon and the end of the world. There's a couple songs that are very focused on that, and then the rest are just kind of loosely built around that theme. I always wanted to have like a graphic novel, a film, and everything around it, but obviously life gets in the way sometimes, so I'm just happy we're finally releasing it. And I, because it's taken so long, that's why I wanted to put it on vinyl, just do something special. So one of the main themes of the album is kind of based on the mysterious granite vaults of the Mormon church. Of course, with a name like Hiram in Salt Lake, I grew up Mormon. Left the church roughly around 15 or 16, kind of in and out, till about 25 when I was completely for sure done. But so anyways, always like heard stuff about how there's stuff from all these countries that foreign leaders had asked the church to store. And of course, genealogy and impenetrable and guarded by people with like automatic rifles, you know, trained marksmen, that kind of thing. So it's like, definitely as someone who just likes to indulge in, this is pre-MAGA times, like conspiracy theories when it was sort of fun and it wasn't, you know, putting our entire system of government at risk, to think like, oh, maybe we didn't land on the moon, or maybe there are aliens working with the government. But anyways, the vaults, since I was thinking like Armageddon, end of the world, alien invasion, the idea that someone who had special access to the vaults might be like, oh, there's a safe place to hide. As far as the concept goes, it's pretty much the central song. The lyric, "Thought I Would Be Safe," refers to, in the storyline of the concept album, this guy, again, took himself and his family to the vault, and in the storyline, his family still gets taken out, and he almost does, and that's the gist of that song.
I didn't know that's what happened.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Whether I knew it consciously or not, my life was kind of heading off the rails. And I definitely probably wrote lyrics that were a little too, not specific on this album, but some other stuff that were maybe a little too autobiographical or told too much. But yeah, I was just burning the candle at both ends and pushing to do all these things and not focusing on my marriage as much as I should have, or my own mental health. And I think a lot of this, the lyrics, reflect that. And my wife, then wife, now ex-wife's grandmother died, and my ex-father-in-law was kind of a real piece of work and struggled with substance abuse and stuff, and he couldn't really keep a job, and he was, you know, we saw him in a really bad state on multiple occasions at like pretty hardcore drugs and things. And so when his mom died, my ex-wife's grandma, that kind of was the A Meager Inheritance kind of refers to, he didn't get anything when his mom died because she didn't have anything. She's a very humble person. So that's the specific, but I think generally it's sort of me in my own life. My father was an attorney, and he burned the candle both ends, and he died sooner than he should have, and he didn't manage his money well. And so I'm not complaining, but none of us kids got anything, you know. And and then just generally, like, this is pre-pandemic, the before times, but it just felt like, you know, we'd gotten to a point society-wise that it was the first generation or so that was having it worse than their parents. Like, we kind of had this unspoken promise in America, every generation's going to get better and we're the best country. And that was just really felt like it was all coming apart at the seams. And again, this was all pre-pandemic, so yeah, well,
but it was during the downturn with the housing crisis, so I think there is sort of a melancholy and to the mm-hmm. album. And
I think it's a testament too, though, to have subject material and backstory like that, that you'd think that would contribute maybe to a heavy metal or like a black metal album, but it ended up, it's very accessible and it's optimistic in its sound. But then when you get into it, for me, I generally don't gravitate towards pop, just mostly because lyrically it doesn't confront a lot of those heavy issues in life. It just sort of seems to gloss over it, and that actually causes me more anxiety to hear, oh, everything's great, it's wonderful. It's like, no, life isn't wonderful. But this album is just a really unique amalgam where it takes those heavy subjects.
The instrumentation on it is playful as well, you know, so there's melodica on it, and there's recorder, and even a young person's voice on it, which is lovely. But there's a playful element while still having a serious part to it. And of course it rocks too. And I think that's a kind of music that appealed to many of us, you know, those of us who were from the 80s and 90s that really liked upbeat music that had a more heavy theme behind the lyrics to it. This is like the most upbeat record about the end of the earth.
I hadn't connected the dots before. This was your outlet for the stuff that was going on in your life, you know, like to start thinking about doom and gloom, I guess.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
It's probably one of my roughest moments where I got brave and quit a job thinking that I had another one lined up, and that one fell through, and then I couldn't find another job. And so I had plenty of time to work on this at the time. Not a plenty of time. So, but I struggled with how that felt, you know, to do interviews and to not be able to get another job.
As I recall, when you quit, you had stock options, so you bought all these instruments with the stock options you cashed out.
Yeah, that probably wasn't a good move either, but we did have options for
like congas and guitar and an amp and a keyboard, and he was kind of our sugar daddy for a while.
Yeah, and then I sold them at very affordable prices to my friends. You know?
I know how that goes.
Well, so they're still in the family.
Yeah.
I also, at that time, was kind of struggling because, yeah, it was just post the big crash. And so I was impacted in my work life and had devoted a lot of my, you know, time and energy and to my profession. And it just was kind of on the rocks at that point. I mean, I still had a job, but, you know, I was in a bit of an existential crisis, one of many, I'm sure. But anyway, at that time, our music and not, you know, our recordings, our performances, our camaraderie as a band was a real respite for me. me and a way for me to feel like I was still accomplishing something.
It's funny how that all aligned. Like in my case, I had left school. The school situation, they stole some of my intellectual property, and that was a whole weird mess. And so I left very embittered from that, got out of a relationship that even 15 years later, I still haven't gotten over that one. So it was really raw and just emotionally vulnerable time. And so I think having that vulnerability coming into the studio, it was almost like an avatar for what I was feeling, where I was part of the project, but yet it was sort of a safe shield where I could download those feelings and then contribute to the project. And so it sounds like we were kind of all in that same wavelength at the same time.
This album is for Oliver Valenzuela, our friend we lost during the pandemic. He was heavily involved in the label and very prolific songwriter and musician and just a good guy who sort of networked so much and brought so many people together, mostly through music and music-related stuff. But he was from Chile, and I guess his experience with Liberal government being from there was not good. So he came in. And I remember, you know, I've always had like EVs and small little compact cars and been like, for Utah especially, you know, more on the liberal side. And I remember one time Oliver, he always had like gas guzzlers and stuff. He's like, I didn't leave Chile and come to America to drive economy cars and not eat hamburgers or something like that. Anyways, I feel like he kind of got swept up in a lot of disinformation and was a little bit anti-mask and perhaps anti-vax, unfortunately, because he did end up dying of COVID.
And left a bunch of kids behind. And,
yep, he left, what, like 8 or 9 kids?
Yeah. And we loved Oliver.
Yeah.
So we're very sad about it.
Yeah, I had a breakdown the other morning where it's like I had not processed it and it just hit. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. Kind of cathartic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, that was the closest person I lost during the pandemic.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm connecting the dots again. So, you know, he grew up with Pinochet in power in Chile. And there were a lot of people, of course, that became very suspicious of the government because obviously people were disappearing and missing. And so it makes sense that he came to the United States and did have that distrust and unfortunately didn't trust the mandates for the pandemic.
You're about to hear Thought It Would Be Safe from our album, A Meager Inheritance, in its entirety.
signs, but there are no
This episode was produced and edited by me, Mary Culbertson, coordinated by William Hughes, and promoted by the Slug Magazine editorial staff. Be sure to check out this month's issue of Slug. You can find a copy any place cool or at slugmag.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Soundwaves, please take 60 seconds to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Slug is proud to be a sponsor of the 16th annual Craft Lake City DIY Festival presented by Harmons. It's Utah's largest local-centric arts, music, science, and technology festival. Join us August 9th through the 11th at the Utah State Fairgrounds for local art, local music, local food, and more as we celebrate Utah's creative culture and arts community.
Did you enjoy this episode of Slug Soundwaves? You and the local community can continue to enjoy Slug Mag's content for free, but please consider making a one-time or ongoing contribution. Each contribution, no matter the amount, helps support Slug's creation of thoughtful media coverage on SLC's music, arts, events, and community subcultures. Head over to slugmag.com/donate to make your contribution today.